Shopping Maniacs. You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave. Finally got to zero RSS unread. Rupert, and with me is Chris.
I accidentally clicked the button the other day. I clicked the mark all as read in the reader I was in, and it was no undo, nothing. It just was like, oh, those are all gone. At least it's not like email, you know, like that would actually cause me literal strife, I think. If I went to my actual inbox and just selected them all and archived them, that's not an option for me. I have too many, there's people waiting for answers, and it would just make me look bad or lose a client. You know, there'd be problems. RSS, yeah. Not so much, you know.
You had a post on about that on your semi-secret email blog. Well, it was about wasn't it, what's his name from The Office?
Parks and Rec.
He like maybe a setup, but he just like oops deleted his whole like 50,000 unreads or something.
Yeah, which 50,000 for inbox. A celebrity seems pretty light for Chris Pratt. That seems light.
Chris Pratt.
Who has a findable email address? Yeah.
He should probably have like somebody who does that for him. Like, but he was also like admitting
he does.
I just sign up for everything. If it says you want your email, I'm like, okay.
So yeah. Which he's so earnest sounding that it was almost a weird moment for me with him. Cause how do you not love Chris Pratt? I love Chris Pratt. Love him. But it's like, you do have people answer email for you. I promise you're a huge star. So you do. And the other one is there are so many problems with this. One of them is that he promised then that he would get through all 50,000 of them by doing a couple of days, doing them, you know, over time for people. I'm like, that's not a good use of your time, Chris Pratt. Like,
yeah,
don't do that. Like, again, find somebody else to do it for. And it's one thing if you're like, want to tell fans that you'll get back to your fans. But I think you're setting up a situation where you can't do that for very long. You know, you could spend the rest of your life doing that. So, like, you're setting up expectations that you can't get through. Anyway, I like thinking about email all the time. Just little things.
Are you on this new Hey that's very popular?
I immediately closed the thing. The idea that you can only have an @hey.com email address. I was like, okay, bye. What?
Oh.
Like, and I get that there's a whole paradigm thing there yet. Like, I should probably just get over myself for a minute and give it more of a chance. But at the moment that I got the code and I was going to get in there, I was like, no, this, I can't just play with your client. It's like a whole thing. And then all this App Store controversy, which we should not get into because that is uniquely the there's enough white men talking about the Hey Apple problem at the moment.
Yeah, there's lots of Apple podcasts, but it's interesting to me that it's a web only product basically, you know, but it's also interesting to me like that you have to use their stuff in their silo sort of, that seems
both and they webby have web and wrapper unwebby apps
at the same time.
Yeah. Right. In a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to describe. And then there is stuff like you have to okay every single domain name that emails you. Like,
Oof. Okay. Yeah. Well,
like, I don't have those problems. My email problems are not that. And then I was thinking about this happened to me just the other day, right? I open up I use Gmail. I like Gmail. Gmail's always been there for me. 20 plus years of Gmail. No getting no spam. I can search every email I ever got. It comes in handy all the time. It's fast, nice client. I think they do a damn fine job. Okay, end of rant. I have Gmail app on my phone. I used to really like the Inbox app, by the way, rip Inbox. Now we're back to the Gmail app, whatever. It just quit on me. Like I'd open it up and it would insta-quit and go back to the home screen. Couldn't get it. I'd empty my whole inbox. So there's no emails in there, insta-quit. I don't know what was wrong with it. Something was wrong with it. But so I was like, wow, gosh, I have a lot of built up muscle memory of using that as my client, but I can't use it right now. I literally can't use it right now. So I just got rid of it. I just moved it away to some other folder and put a different email client there. And I just picked the native one on the phone. It's called Mail. Use Mail. Mm-hmm. And I switched to it. And you know what the implications of that were? Nothing. It was fine. It's fine. I use it. I still do my email. It affected my productivity none. I have the same amount of unread emails. Like my fingers aren't mad about anything in particular. And it got me thinking about, like, an email client is not the solution to your email problems. You cannot find a perfect client and have it clean up your email. This is a mental game. It's a effort game, elbow grease game, a change in how you operate game. It is not an email client game, getting good at email.
Yeah, I probably, you know what my one trick for email was? Not caring. Just I gave up. I don't know how. I get probably 50, 60 emails a day.
Okay.
I maybe check it. I have no like drive to check my inbox anymore. And it's probably like I spend way too much time on Twitter and stuff like that, or Slacks or whatever. But I'm actually going to check my email. Nope. I go through like 60 at the end of the day, and that's it. That's so. It works for me.
60 at the end of the day, though, that every single day, that's a healthy email strategy, I think.
But I do have like the problem that Hey would maybe solve in a more strict filtering sense is like I get a lot of like spam. I'm on some list, right? And even if I click unsubscribe and say I did not sign up for this list, I still get, you know, I'm on some disseminated list out there that my email keeps showing up on marketers' email list. And I have a theory that it started from a conference, but I'm not going to out them yet. But it all started right after I went to a conference.
Yeah,
hot drama that I know I didn't consent to my email at this conference, to my knowledge. But anyway, but even today, I got like a ad or whatever for like a shop, the Shopify that sells fully automatic AR-15 triggers. And I'm just like,
wow,
big no thank you. Like,
really? So, you got a marketing email from a Shopify store that you have nothing to do with. This is from Shopify itself suggesting you this store?
Or it's through MailChimp. It's like, but yeah, it was like a, wow. You know, I'm on somebody's list basically. And I just, you know,
okay. So Shopify couldn't have stopped this. This wasn't their algorithm. I don't think
Shopify could, but I'm just like, you know, this is terrible, man. Like, I get it a lot, and I'm on like a lot of lists. Like, it's getting weirder. And I think this list was picked up, you know, I'm just following trends here, but like, there's been some weird, like, religio conservatism stuff, like extreme. I'm fine with religious opinions, but this was like very like extreme, you know, Obama is the devil sort of stuff. And so, you know, so that problem with the email where like you're tracked and I know they know I opened it, but then they know I clicked on unsubscribe, but then they keep me on the list.
Yeah. Again. That's a killer, so like, isn't it? Like when you unsubscribe, makes it, that means like extra subscribe.
Yeah, it means extra subscribe in some weird country on this planet. So anyway, so that problem with email, you know, I guess I could probably do it and go into Gmail and just nuke these.
But you know, Hey would stop that because you just wouldn't even see it. It would be like some weird.
Would never see it, you know? And then, you know, again, RSS to the rescue, Feedbin to the rescue. I started doing all my newsletters through Feedbin, you know?
Yeah.
So like, that's a pretty cool feature because I can like, cool. You know, if you actually want news, you don't have to sign up for somebody's dumb newsletter with your personal email address. You just give them this ghost Feedbin, ghost email. So
let me do my inbox real quick. This is a peek into the life of, and this is why I care about email, because hopefully this will, you know, give some insight into why I think this is important. So I had a thought, I think it was late last night, where I was like, you know what, I should do more for this particular sponsor. I haven't done anything special for them in a minute. And I don't know what, but I just like, I had this thought and I was like, that's a good idea. So I went into my email and I found an email, my last email thread with them. And I just put it in my inbox to just give myself the little to-do to reach out to them. Then I have a QA event that's coming up this week that that I forgot about, and I'm going to be out of town, and now I need to have a like a little mini hard conversation where I'm like, "Ooh, super sorry, can we reschedule that, or is it too late? Should I figure out something?" Okay, so that has to be dealt with this week. I have an email from Lynn Fisher here saying, "You know, Lynn, she's like the world's greatest web designer, I think.
Yeah, top notch.
Somehow she agrees to work with me on stuff." It's amazing. I hired her at one point to redo all the illustrations for our flex blocks and grid guides on CSS Tricks so they look all good. And I was like, you know what we should do, Lynn? Let's turn your illustrations into a poster and people could buy the poster. And I found that it's really quite easy to wire up an integration between WooCommerce on the site, which is they do sponsor the show once in a while, but I'm just doing this because it's technology that I'm using. And like a company that does on-demand printing and distributing. So all we had to do is get a beautiful design from Lynn. Check. That was definitely the hard part. And then I just made a new product in Printify that has her beautiful thing on there. And I tested it. I sent one to myself first to make sure it wasn't junk. Turned out pretty good. Wow. So now I just have this thing. And so this conversation thread is me and Lynn going back and forth, getting all the details of this thing right. And they're live right now. You go to the Flexbox guide on CSS Tricks. It says, buy the poster at the top. And you can buy the poster. Pretty cool. But that happened all 100% through email for me. This whole like idea through getting it live. No Slack, nothing. No phone call. It happened 100% through email. Somebody's inviting me to a conference and I said, I'm fucking too busy because I am, you know, but then I got this like, well, I don't know. What if we do a live shop talk show? What if I MC a little bit so I don't have to, how about that? How about we tie in some sponsorship stuff to it too? So this is business happening in my inbox. I'm going to get thousands of dollars out of this at the end of it. You know, not bad, right? Mm-hmm. I got an email from my music friend saying, like, let's get together this week. We'll just stay 6 feet apart. We'll play outside in the yard, drink a beer, and play some banjos. Hell yeah. Down. You know, Mark, what's his last name?
Oh, Thiel.
That's funny because I know another Mark Thiel. That's why it's, sorry, Mark. I know you, but I just know two Mark Thiels. Anyway. He hooked me up with, I was looking for a new video intro for CSS Tricks for my videos because I was like, oh, my own is old. I want a new cool one. He's like, you got to meet Dina. Oh, no, I'm killing it with the last. Amen. Dina Amen. I'll put it in the show notes. Look her up. She's amazing. She does these videos that are like stop motion where she like breaks garbage and turns into monsters and stuff. They're so cool.
What?
And I was like, I hire you immediately. Please do my intro. So this thread going back and forth about her playing with the intro, you know, I got some GitHub emails of some people that like want my opinion on something, which I'll probably archive because I just, that's hard to make time for that stuff. Sorry. I got an email that somebody's asking me to at CodePen to test something. Sure. No problem. My doctor's emailing me saying I have a past due invoice. I can't archive that.
Yeah. You can't just.
So that's it. That's my inbox. But to me, like 85% of this is like good stuff. Only good is coming from these things. You know,
just your inbox story, it's very diverse, if that makes sense. The tasks that you're doing there, you're paying a dentist invoice, you're setting up a poster, you're getting a commercial figured out, you're managing like how you do conferences. Like, I think that's one neat thing about email as a platform is it's very diverse and you can, it's sort of like, and you can sign up for things to get exactly what you want out of it. Almost like RSS, you know, just like,
right. Oh,
just email me this newsletter, this roundup of links or whatever. I paid for Patreon. Patreon sends me stuff a bunch, you know, like, I think that's cool.
What's not in mine is there's a few moments, and I try to avoid this a little bit, where I break off the email into other jobs because I don't want 10 emails. I really only just want one if I can get away with it. But there's one that's too busy for that, and one of them is we're going back and forth with writers at CSS Tricks. That has to be separated out because there's just a lot of back and forth there with all those. So that's special, but that's cool because then I can invite people to it. This show has an email address called sponsorship at shopdocshow.com. We have that so the three of us, me and you and Chris Enns, can have access to that. That's just has this one purpose for that. And like, you know, that feels right. That's been working, you know, but I can't, I don't want to do that 10 times. Like there's a limit to how many different email addresses I can have.
Yeah. Yeah. I have like, my personal, I have my Paravel one, and then I have like an old, Hotmail one that just is like almost purely for Windows. It's so weird. And then I have like a
Dave Rupert has a Hotmail address. You heard it here first.
I use a Hotmail. Yeah. not just have one. I use one. But then, you know, occasionally clients, which this is a weird thing about client services, you know, I'm sure your like employees have a CodePen email address, possibly, you know, but I will get an email address for the client. So occasionally I'll have like these whole emails and all this, you know, often they're enterprise people and they have Active Directory stuff. And so like I have all this, you know, Active Directory stuff. And so it's kind of interesting. I one thing I've never had, email and calendars kind of go hand in hand. I've never had the like God calendar, you know, where I can just look at one calendar. I have to kind of like balance, really? Like, okay, this calendar's in this one. And you can like funnel all these in, but like, you know, my busy times are never like, I don't have one calendar. I have like five calendars. I have a Shop Talk calendar. I have a
And you have to like log calendar. Out of a website and log into another one or what?
Yeah, well, I can like get them in the calendar app, but like my phone doesn't have it because then like my phone's like, oh, you need to sign up for your client's like whatever Spy Tech or whatever it is, like the Active Directory on your phone thing, you know, like where you're like VPN'd every, you know, your whole phone goes through their VPN and stuff like that. And I'm just like, you know, I'm just not going to do work on my phone in this instance. So.
Yeah. I luck out in that where all mine are Google based. So I don't use Google Calendar, but I have them all there for the sharing capabilities and sync capabilities and all that.
Yeah. I just wish I had the like auto calendar. I'm just so bad at calendars, so it's not even worth it. You know what I mean? But I just wish I had the auto calendar thing where somebody's like, oh, I want to schedule a meeting with Dave. Oh, he's like busy at 8:45 in the morning, so I'm gonna schedule, you know, like I don't know,
what's that app that everybody has that I use it too once in a while, like Schedule-y or not?
Oh, like Calendly,
isn't it? Calendly, yeah. That does look at your calendars and it does, you know, allows people to schedule meetings in that way. What a genius startup product. That's great. That's so cool.
I'm surprised it's just not acquired, you know what I mean? Like, because it's a feature of email or calendaring.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not.
Right. Like, I think Google might actually have something that's similar. Like you can like somehow expose what your availability is without saying what, you know? But I don't know that it allows people to then actually book a meeting. But I don't know.
I would need to check, like, you know, again, like the client's work calendar, client B's work calendar, my work calendar, the Shop Talk calendar.
And then sometimes, you know, like something's on there that doesn't, it's like, it's almost like informational, you know, like,
oh, like
snowblower
Stephanie's birthday
is ready. Yeah, right. Like you don't have to not have a meeting that day because it's Stephanie's birthday, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's all.
I'm sure Stephanie disagrees.
Cool. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, she's very upset every time I forget. But then the weakness there, this is the thing. The weakness is I'll have randos from, at some point I said, I'll just get everybody's birthday from Facebook or some app did that for me, right? Mm-hmm. And so now I have a bunch of email birthdays or whatever for randos. I mean,
semi-randos. And it's on your main calendar too. It's not even on some like birthday.
Yeah, just showing up. Yeah, yeah, my main, great. You know. So there, that's in there. But then the second part of it is people who like aren't on Facebook that I care about, their birthdays aren't on there. Like Reagan Ray's birthday is today. Said happy birthday. But it's
happy birthday, Reagan.
But anyway, it's just there's like certain things. It's just like, you know, it's that like data blindness thing. It's like I have data. I actually have too much data so that it's worthless. And now I am just like I'm almost data blind. So I've actually gone through, I made a private app using the new Vue component editor in CodePen.
Oh,
made
yeah.
A little app.
Nice.
I stole all the birthdays from Facebook. Like, and I have like 400 friends or 600 friends or something weird because I've like collected too many people in my life. And if you're waiting on a friend request, I'm just going to start saying, no, I apologize. I just can't handle the same way. But I went through and I pruned this list of like 600 birthdays down to like 100 birthdays. And I made a little app that tells me whose birthday it is every week. And I added people. And so I check it every day, that, cause that was kind of my, something I want to be a big boy about is like remembering people's birthday or whatever.
That's so nice. That's an adult like thing to do, you know, be like, listen, I know we can't like hang out or we used to, but at least I can, the least I can do is do something nice to you on your birthday.
Yeah. And you know, it's, you get older. I think, you know, your friends used to all hang out in the same living room, but then, you know, people get married, have kids, mm-hmm. go off, like live in different cities and relocate and stuff. And so you just don't see your friends, but they're still your friends. So you still want to reach out and say, hey.
It's funny how the nature of friendship changes over the time like that. It's not like it's, you know, you almost like miss it. You're like, oh, why don't we hang out and just like laugh in lawn chairs anymore? It's like,
yeah,
I can.
Well, we have 8 o'clock bedtimes. So that's part of
it. Yeah, like I can like give you about 10 good reasons why we don't. Chief among them is that I don't want to.
I saw this tweet the other day. This is relaying tweets is a little bit like relaying SNL clips. You saw it always goes terrible. But here we go. This guy was like, or my 16-year-old self, like, hey, do you still listen to Rage Against the Machine? He goes, yeah, man, I listened to him at a protest last week. Oh, that's cool. And then I had to leave to, like, put my kids to bed. What? Pizza hurts my tummy. it just basically summed up, like, my weekend. It was just like, man, just you get old, it changes everything.
So, yeah. Did you eat something you shouldn't have yesterday? It was Father's Day, so I feel like it's kind of.
Oh yeah, had pizza.
So, me too. Best thing happened to me too. There was a trainee, and he like a little bit burnt the first one, which I don't even mind. And so they made me a second one, so I got two pizzas.
Idiots!
They gave me them both.
Free pizza. Mm-hmm. Just
mistake.
Yeah, that's fine. No, we had pizza. Wife made some delicious, not brownies, blondies. And that's
good.
Those are better to me. I'm pro vanilla.
Oh, that's great. We had fun. We rented a canoe, paddled up and down the river. It's good.
Nice.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Heffler & Co. Welcome as a sponsor. I am stoked about it. They are my favorite type shop out there. The URL is one of the best URLs you could possibly imagine, typography.com. Nothing is more critical to a good web experience than just clear, clean, attractive typography, which is good news because that's not particularly hard on the web anymore. You know, type on the web has just gotten so good. It's affordable and easy to integrate. Heffler & Co. fonts are the designers of some of the world's most beloved typefaces like Gotham and Knockout. You know, the CSS Tricks logo? It's just Gotham rounded. All caps, CSS-Tricks. That's it. And I've used it for so long, I feel like it's striking. I feel like it's just coming into its own, really. I really like it still. But all the typography on CSS-Tricks is also Heffler Co. fonts. Ringside, Sentinel, Operator. Ringside is the title. Sentinel is the serifed body copy. And I've only been using it now for, what's it been, 3-4 months? And I just love it. In fact, my own team just yesterday complimented me on the typography of the site and said, it's really, you know, I've been tweaking it forever. It's finally really beautifully come into its own. And so that's something I take really serious. And Operator Mono is just my favorite monospace font for code, you know? Really, it was one of the first ones out there that had the kind of slight cursive look for italics, which was just genius and has been copied many times since. I love it. So at typography.com, you'll find nothing but the highest quality fonts. They're screen optimized for the browser, complete families, deep character sets, clever features to help you solve design problems, you know? And then on the site itself, there's free tutorials and stuff to help you become a better typography. Oh, thank God I could use it. Download their fonts to self-host them, or it's $99 a year to get a cloud typography subscription, which lets you use the entire library for $99 a year. And you get 15% off that if you use coupon code SHOPTALKSHOW at checkout. Just one word, SHOPTALK at checkout. Typography.com/SHOPTALK gets you that deal. Incredible deal, incredible fonts. Thank you for the sponsorship. Love it. Let's see here. So, God, what have we been ranting about? Email and calendars? My gosh.
Talked about emails and calendars, so we're doing pretty good for
Oh, and I mentioned my posters just offhandedly because of the connection to, I don't even know how I ended up talking about that. But yeah, if you want a CSS Grid or CSS Flexbox poster, they're the best ones you'll ever get.
These are great. Well, but you're really undercutting your whole operation here. How are you going to get the traffic if people have the post inside their house on the wall?
I did consider it. I did consider it. And I was like, by the time you've given me, they cost $25, in which I believe we get 40% of that. And then Lynn and I are splitting it. So it's kind of like whatever I get, a couple of bucks per. That's way higher than the ECPM of one person.
Oh, but one person coming 1,000 times a year. You got to see, you got to think of it.
There's no way that's worth $2 or whatever, but yeah, maybe. I am hurting myself, but I have a feeling like you buy it for the wall and then you Google it anyway, because you can't copy and paste the wall, you know?
Well, that's fair point. So,
yeah.
All right.
So what should we talk about now? There's a Miriam Suzanne post on CSS Tricks today that I think is going to hit with some people, because she was sometimes it takes a little minute for new CSS things to like dig into how people are actually using them day to day and what kind of the best practices end up and stuff. You know, like the day Grid dropped, we weren't using Grid like we are now, you know, like things change. And this is a cool one about how, you know, the most interesting thing about CSS custom properties is the fact that they follow the cascade, you know, in a way that like SAS variables just can't, because SAS doesn't know what the DOM is. SAS only knows what like the CSS OM is. Like SAS variables can be scoped by nesting. That's a scoping, but they can't actually use the actual cascade, you know? So this has a little bit to do with that, but it also has a little bit of an idea of like where and how do you want to declare things like colors and fonts and stuff to be used. So you could, for example, like go way high up in the cascade and have really low specificity and just say, like, this is the general base colors I want to use. And then you can always override, you know, go really target the exact button, you know, maybe even use inline styles to set a color through a custom property. But there's kind of middle ground there too. There's like, I don't know, what page are you on? What component are you in? That kind of thing. And you could set properties there too. And, you know, that can be a little verbose, or you can do it with a variable stack, as Miriam put it, where you kind of like use a bunch of nested variable statements to be like, try to use the specific one, but if you don't have that, then fall back to something a little less specific, then fall back to something a little less specific. And the specificity is based on some naming that you set up, you know?
So you have like a global or whatever, var or whatever, body, background, var, theme background, and then comma var global background comma, like, because you can
scope specify far back,
but if the theme thing never gets set, if that's just empty, then it'll go back to the global background, which should be interesting. It's kind of like font stacks for
it's like font stacks for variables, but you have to set it up as a stack, you know. So it's really leveraging the idea that variable, the var function, var parenthesis parenthesis, has you use the property, and I don't think this is that much used, and then you can comma separate a fallback value. And when you think mm-hmm. fallback, you're like, I don't know, I'll just put black or whatever. I don't think people do that much, but the trick here is that it doesn't have to just be a value. It can be another variable, and that one can have a fallback, you know?
Interesting. So, yeah, no, that's cool tech. I always, for this to work, you have to be IE11 plus. So, because IE11 really does not like variables.
Right.
But wow. Yeah. If you don't care about IE11 or it's not on a priority.
Yeah. I don't like, you know, there's one thing, you know, so global usage. Huge asterisk here, like I don't care about global usage generally, but just for podcasting reasons, is like 1.4% or something. And I would think a lot of projects that us all work on, it's going to be lower because they're just kind of like more whatever modern projects. And I bet a lot of that 1.x% or whatever come from, I don't know, Wikipedia and like big sites that have super global usage. And that, so, you know, like if you look at the statistics of CodePen or something, it's super zero, like not.
Yeah. Well, you guys also flag IE11 and say, hey,
well, you can't right. Use which would show up in analytics. But yeah, that's the thing. CS-Strix even lower. CS-Strix has really weird traffic. For example, like I think it peaked out at 4% ever mobile traffic. And then last year dipped to like 3. So, you know, globally, if you look at global statistics, we've crossed the 50% barrier generally for mobile traffic. More than half of web traffic generally is mobile, not on CS-Strix. It's just, it's really dependent on the site itself. That's why that's what that huge asterisk was about, is I think when you're caring about things like the support of features and analytics tracking and yada, you know, it's the generic statistics are much less interesting than the specific ones. I think we got into that last week a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have a lot of my clients are still supporting IE11. So it's tough because some clients will have like the dollar value of IE11 written right there, and it's, you know, multiple salaries a month of money, you know, and so you're just so like
you deal with it, especially because your client's Microsoft. That doesn't help you.
Well, but I think even companies are starting, you can make a pretty good argument like, hey, this is just like something that's hard to support, even with like the latest and greatest and fallbacks, you know, or progressive enhancement. There's a lot of work you can do. But like, I feel like if you draw the line after IE11, like if you say that one goes away, we only do modern browsers, it opens up a lot of the web.
Well, because then you're in evergreen territory, because Edge is
evergreen territory.
Yeah. There was early, what got us once in a while.
Early Edge.
Right, which is starting to update now. But that one had some issues too. The earliest versions of like non-Chromium Edge had some ES6 stuff it didn't support and stuff. So
like spread didn't work. Yep. And so it just, you know, you have weird things. But I think, you know, that kind of is going away and hopefully those issues become less and less. But it, you know, it's getting I think
it's still there. We'll find new stuff to bitch about as soon as that's not a problem anyway.
It'll be Mobile Safari, I think.
Yeah, it will.
You know? You're but, right. Yeah. Sorry, Jen. So, yeah. But I mean, you know, and things changed. I mean, when we started this, we were like, I think our first episode, we're talking about IE6 and stuff like that. And so it's just, you know, like that stuff happened. It's been
some things change, some things stay the same. You know, here's a trick. You want a trick?
Okay.
It's a one-liner to set the percentage of the scroll position of the browser, or to just get your hands on that number. You know, you've seen this a million times. It's like, you know, window dot document dot document element dot page x dot height dot, you know, divided by the window dot scroll dot blah, 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 blah. It's a calculation. Yeah. But you can get it right, and you can get it done. And it's just one thing divided by the other thing. and then use some, you know, some math dot round or whatever you got to do to get the number. So now you got a number. It's between 0 and 100.
Okay.
It's either you're not scrolled or you're 100% scrolled. And you set property, set the scroll property. Okay. So now CSS knows a number from 0 to 100 if you're scrolled down. Well, how useful is that? Now you got the world of CSS unlocked for you based on what percentage of scroll position it is. 0 might be interesting, 100 might be interesting, and all everything in between might be interesting too. You could hide and show things. But here's this Scott Kellum trick that I think is so cool. He sets on the root or the HTML, whatever, some low specificity element, that scroll thing. And he sets all animations, and this is just a demo, so you could scope it however you need to have animation play state paused, and then animation delay of that number times -1 seconds or whatever. It does a little like multiplication thing too based on 1 second. So you set all your animations to 1 second. Then as you scroll down, none of the animations that you've used, the keyframe animations, are moving. But as you scroll, they complete 1 cycle of their animation until you hit the bottom of the page. So you could have...
because it's times 0 or 100. Huh.
Yeah, yeah. And if your animation duration, if you change that to 0.5, it would complete 2 iterations because that's, you know, whatever. You can do the math to how many iterations you want. But let's say you just have a bar and you want it to be width equals 1% to 100% or 0% to 100%. You just make that a keyframe animation. And as you scroll down, it fills out the bar because that's what the animation does. But it could do a rotation. Yeah. It could do literally anything. It could go from red to blue. It doesn't have to be a number-based thing anymore because it's just completing the keyframes from 0 to 100%. But at this specific place. So you have this one liner in JavaScript and it opens up this scroll-based animation thing to you in a really kind of powerful way. That's a Scott Kellum trick that I'm stealing.
I think I use that. It's very similar for like that cheap bass parallax, you know, just you set a little scroll variable, like number, but like, I love this percent idea, like, because that's often what you care about is like how far down the whole thing are they, you know?
Yeah, right. It's not as, but if let's say it's 15,000 pixel page, it's not as nuanced then. There's like a whole lot of pixels between 0 and 1 there, but you get a float anyway. So it's like, it is still smooth. It's not like it goes one pixel at a time or 1% at a time.
Yeah, that's the tough part about like using document.scroll or whatever is always like it's like pixel snappy, if that makes sense, like because there's no subpixel for document scroll or whatever, so it would be a lot smoother if it had like a based on the full height or, you know, some math there to get the height and the
yeah it's a cool trick though. Hey, Shop Talk Show listeners, this episode is brought to you in part by Jetpack. Man, they've been doing some cool stuff lately. You know Jetpack, right? It's a plugin for your self-hosted WordPress site that brings you the powers of Automattic, you know, all kinds of powerful cloud-based stuff. You know, we've talked about that a bunch of times. But so there's lots of stuff that Jetpack can do, but they've been moving more towards a pay-for-what-you-need model. So, for example, they have search, right? I use it on our sites. I use it on CSS Tricks as awesome search that happens like off your site, in the cloud, indexed by Elasticsearch. You have a bunch of control over it. Super powerful. Absolutely love it. That's like a la carte, meaning you can just buy it. You know, you had a la carte lunches at... That's why I always think of that. In like middle school, it's like you could just get like a tray lunch and you just get to have whatever they have. Or you could buy like just an apple for $1 or like just a slice of pizza for $1.50, you know? I don't know why. It's what I think of. You can like just buy search if you just want search and you want to Jetpack to do nothing else for you. But they have new ones, you know? So there's backup is the same way. Like you just want backups from your WordPress site and it backs up everything, your database, your files, your media, everything. Super trustworthy. Love that. You can just buy that if you want. And their brand newest one is Jetpack Scan. So if you're just concerned about the security of your WordPress site, which Jetpack does a bunch of stuff anyway for, but this is like, it's literally looking at the files and the database of your site to make sure there's no problems. And if it detects problems, it lets you know if there's problems. And most of those problems you can fix with a click. Like, it knows how to repair it and does. How cool is that? So Jetpack Scan, if you just want that, if you're just like, I need more security for my WordPress site, you can just buy it. $7 a month. Pretty cool. Thanks, Jetpack. And yeah, you know, it's funny timing, because I was just got all excited about that at the same time the Green Sock released their scroll trigger add-on. Mm-hmm. Everybody's playing with that. I think it hit at a perfect time. They had some great marketing for this. I think it's our challenge this week at CodePen too, which is also just weirdly good timing. But I think the market for scroll plugins is like was in kind of bad shape. Like there was Scroll Magic and Scroll, and people weren't particularly excited about any of them, I feel like. And now all of a sudden Green Sock comes along with their kind of beautiful take on the thing. I think it's going to do really well for them.
You know, the demos I've seen, like there's one with like an airplane flying as you like scrolled. And
was that Steve? Who sent?
I was trying to find out because I'm like, where's my likes? You know, but
emailed me right away and said, can I write this for CSS Tricks? I'm like, you can't not. You're not allowed not to write about this.
Yeah, you have to, I guess. yeah. Where am I gonna find it? Come on now. Sure, certainly. I liked it. Oh well, it was beautiful. It was amazing.
I had like a 3D model of a plane, which I don't even know how that works on the web. But then it like literally moved around and flew, which is like, well, first you need to get that working. It seems like that's like the almost harder than the scroll part. But they really married together really nicely.
Well, and there's some Z-index trickery where it'd go in front of the text and behind the text, and some that just was very
epic.
Cool. So
that's the kind of job where it's like you get to quote Boeing, you know, $75,000 for that one pager, you know.
Yeah, well, and it's, you know, I think it's, you think about, you remember Snowfall for the New York Times.
Of course. Whatever. And in fact, I think anybody who works in news collectively groaned when we said that. Because it's
well, exactly. Like it became almost a trope or like a, you know, everyone wants Snowfall, you know, I we need to have that, you know,
mm-hmm. With more upsells.
And that's, it's cool. And I do like immersive experiences. I think though, like if every article is a snowfall, nothing's a snowfall. So you need to really like take your time and pack these punches where you can. I think New York Times does an excellent job of like layering in graphics when they can, you know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always work, but they do a pretty good job. So
yeah, it certainly can't be a requirement for, I've been trying to, you know, I have a couple of strategies that at CSS Tricks for it that I try to employ when I can. For one thing, I can just flip on art-directed article mode, and it sets me up a hero at the top and then a single column down the middle of the stuff. It turns off the ads, so I can't do it all the time, but it's like it gives me a little more creative freedom. Actually, doesn't quite turn them off. I think it puts them way at the bottom. And then once you have a single, I think the world is your oyster when you have a single column of text down the middle. So now mm-hmm. I can move the text to the left. I move the text to the right. I can put a big gap. I can put big backgrounds. You just can do whatever. But it did it in this reliable way where it's still got the header. It's still got the footer. The comments are untouched. It's just like this chunk in the middle that gives me design mm-hmm. possibility that I like. And that's just by flipping on a switch. But that's not all I can do. You know, I also have this ability to like, if it's in a special category, do a special template, you know, there's just very, I like having the tools, but the default is to do nothing. Just use your regular template. You know?
Yeah. I hope that's the future I know it's a lot of work to get like a company to agree on one template, you know, but I just, you know, like homepages are so boring, you know, and they just do the same thing. Like, wouldn't it be cool if like, you know, we stop thinking of homepages as a single template. There, it's always four or five templates,
right,
you know,
right.
And they just change based on the news of the day or the volume or the like attention that's needed or, mm-hmm, you know, cause mm-hmm, you know, I think even my homepage, you know, sometimes it's like, sometimes I'll write an article that's just a banger and y'all need to pay attention, you know, or mm-hmm, like, but my homepage doesn't.
I love that all, idea, you know, that it's so, not just that one URL, that the presence of that URL on another page might trigger another template.
Yeah. Yeah. So just cause I don't know.
Actually, you remember this? I used to use this Dave Rupert authored plugin for WordPress called Art Direction, and it had two modes. One of them is apply this CSS just to this page, and one of them is apply this CSS to anywhere that any other page that this thing shows up, like search results or archive or whatever. That way, if you wanted to like change the title, font, and color or something, it didn't have to just be on that one URL. It could be anywhere. That was clever. You did that.
That better Art Direction, because there was an Art Direction.
Yeah, better
Art Direction. Just didn't work.
I still have it installed. I still use it, but it's starting to be outdated for me because I have this other plugin installed that does that, but scoped to blocks, because I'm all into the WordPress block editor now.
Yeah,
and the beauty of it is that, so I can select any element and just apply custom CSS to it, but I don't have to think up a selector or apply it. The selector in this plugin is just selector. You just write selector and then a curly bracket, and it does the scoping of the class to the thing that you're applying it to, which is rather clever. And it does it in the editor too. So the CSS that you're applying to it, you can see as you're doing it. So it's not just like with better Art Direction, you just had to apply the class and then preview the article. And,
yeah.
To see just what you were
cross
doing.
Fingers.
Yeah, this applies it right in the editor, which opens up some possibilities. Cool. Yeah.
That would be a dream. I just that. Yeah, because you want that. I have live reload and all that stuff, so I can do it pretty quickly. But you know, it would just that instant feedback for kind of like little iterations. You know,
that's why I think that this WordPress block editor is a bigger deal on like a psychological level to sites. You know, it's one thing to, you know, be like, WordPress is this behemoth, you know, move away from it. But like, it's not only there's some extra stuff you get, and this like really powerful editor is one of those things, gosh darn it. It's almost like somebody should take it and make it totally isolated so you could edit your markdown files in case you're building an 11D site or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Because the editor is so freaking nice that it's like, I don't, you know, it's almost unfortunate I have to use WordPress to use it. It's not unfortunate to me because I get all kinds of power out of WordPress. Well,
so much of WordPress, right, it was, I mean, you know, anyone can spin up a WordPress. Like, you go to WordPress.com, hit, give me a blog.
Yep.
Done. But like where the client services stuff started coming in was where somebody would say, but I want like a custom about page. I want like three faces beneath. I want it to be responsive. I want it to.
Yeah.
And like, that's where people would get me on the phone. Now they don't need to get me on the phone. And that's good and bad for business. But like,
because there's a columns block and you just rock the columns.
It's a columns block and they'll just figure it out. And
yeah.
You know,
I don't think it's settled in quite yet. Right before this call, I'm mentoring somebody new. And she's got this website. It's like a directory website for the fashion industry. Yada, yada. It's pretty cool, but it needs work. And she, you know, but I'm just trying to figure out where to start mentoring her. She picked WordPress for the site and threw it up on some WordPress hosting somewhere. We might have to reevaluate that. But she did it all by herself entirely. And it has that my first WordPress site going on thing. Like, I've learned what plugins are. And there's a good 25 of them in there. Sliders, contact things, page builder things slapped in there to accomplish layout stuff that she couldn't figure out how to do. You know, it'll take a little untangling, but will it, you know? Like, I feel like it just deleting some of the junk, fine, but I'm not going to like tear this thing apart for her. Like, she's the one who did it. I don't want to. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just got to let people do what they want, or I mean, this is a mentor mentee relationship, but like with clients, you know, they're just like, I just want to put a sign up modal on the page, you know, to block, you know, unload, you get the newsletter modal.
Yeah.
And you're just like, well, if that's important to you and that's how you're going to get business, mm-hmm. good.
And I didn't have to code it. I don't have anything to do with it.
And I don't think it's great for your user experience long-term, but if that is how you're going to make a business decision, I can't really stop you. So yeah,
there were some really smart decisions she made in here too. One of them was thought about it better than I is. So like each one of these, like there's a listing and the listing can have like multiple agents on the listing. And so, and I think she's using some advanced custom fields for it. So that's already cool. But I would have been like done a repeater field and then just manually typed in the agents for each entry. Like that's where my brain would have went. And she didn't do it that way. She made yet another custom post for the agent, then made the agents individually, then programmatically attached the agents to the entries in case the agent was used on multiple fields. I'm like, what are you, a genius? That's like relational database stuff. That's like, yeah, you nailed it. Good job.
See,
that would have been a mess that you dug. If you did it my way and not your way, that would have been a hole that you dug for yourself. That would suck to dig yourself out of later.
You know, it's tough. You always want to do, you're like, if I just do it this way, it's done. If I just enter it this way, it's done. But almost always you need to take that one next step to where it's like very decoupled and very reusable.
Right. You know, like we didn't do this on Shop Talk Show. We didn't make Jen Simmons a unique database object in which we apply to the show. We just typed Jen into the show, which might work for us because, you know, maybe the Jen of past might have a different avatar and have a different job and stuff. And that's relevant to that show doesn't need to change over time. But for, you know, but we didn't do it, you know, whatever.
No. And so we don't have any kind of guest database, you know.
Yeah, you can't. So show me shows that Jen Simmons appeared on. You can't do that because she's not a tag or anything. And you can search, but even our search is not. It's just kind of limited by like a little bit of metadata in the title. So that, I guess that works. But as much, and we put effort into this. This wasn't just like whoops. At one point, we programmatically redid the whole site and still don't have it.
And I have done it before in the past, and it was in old WordPress, at least. Like, I think a lot of plugins smooth it over now. In old WordPress, it was sort of a bit of a dance to get like this relational thing happening. So, again, I don't know. It didn't feel great, I guess, is what I want to say.
Yeah, right. Programmatic connections between posts is not WordPress strength. In any capacity. Although the way she did it is probably the best that can be done, which is was kick ass. I don't know. We have a few minutes. Let's see if we can. I'll find one of these that we should do real quick. Christian Straussbach. I'll pick the last one on the list. Why not? Hello, guys. Loving the show since day one. Oh, baller. I listened to it under my helmet on my motorbike tour through Australia.
Wow.
I'd like to
stay safe.
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay.
I'd like to know if you, I mean, this is probably, he probably wrote this in like November. That's how fast we are at answering.
Okay.
I'd like to know if you start designing a website as mobile first and then convert it to a desktop, or if you go mobile first, or if the mobile first is like feels wrong, you start on the desktop version or what? So what are your thoughts, you know? And I guess he's asking for like generally, because I don't know, I've certainly done project both ways, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, we probably, we're maybe slippery. We'll kind of do the desktop and then we'll build that as quick as we can. And then we'll have a mobile view and then we'll show the client the mobile view, or they start insisting on that.
Interesting. So desktop first, even for Parabell. I mean, I definitely am.
But we build it mobile first, and that's the important part. And then...
Oh, you dev it mobile first. Yeah, I see.
Yeah, for sure. Dev it mobile first. And then... but, you know, it's... I think that's also just a function of what you're developing on, you know? And I have done a few, like, mobile first apps, like, very mobile first. And I think my struggle there, and I think you can, like, it's that thing where you like need to know where you're going to some degree too, like from a markup perspective, because I'll just do a mobile column and I'm like, great, I'm done. And then stretch it out and it gets weird. And then, you know, and then I'm just like, what do I do? Because I had this, like, I don't know, spreadsheet looking thing, and it was very, you know, that doesn't work on a desktop. Like, you can't just have like edge to edge borders or whatever. I don't know, but I'm just, so I kind of like, you hit a limit where it's weird. So I think like building it mobile first is, like you said, the traffic is overwhelmingly mobile now. So I do think like we all need to reprogram our brains and like start thinking of your website as a mobile thing, not a desktop thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think from a design perspective, it does kind of help to know where you're going from like a holistic viewport sort of perspective. So
yeah, that's cool. I mean, I would trust you. You know, there's nobody in the world I'd rather have working on my system than Paravel. You know, like, you all got this.
Well, thank you. But never, like, I think there's never phone in your mobile experience at the same time. Like, you have to, when you're building it, you have to consider both of these at the same time. You can't just be like, oh, we'll figure out mobile later. You know, it just never works.
That's the thing, is it's harder. It's just harder. So start with the hard one first. It's like you have to make harder decisions. What's going to be here and what can't? Because there's just straight up, there's less room. And you can't pack too much crap on there. The thing's going to suck. And your mobile design intuition is going to be like, this sucks if there's too much on there. So if you're having the this sucks, you got to pull some stuff back, start getting deeper into the design and make those hard calls. And then as it gets wider, that the decisions are just easier to make. You know, I had this thought. Here's the one. It's just totally random, right? You know how all these mobile sites have like a fixed bottom bar for navigation?
Yeah.
And so does Windows, and so does Mac. The OS, it has a dock on the bottom, and you click crap on the bottom. Why don't desktop websites ever use that? They never have a dock.
You know, well, fixed positioning is weird in iOS. But is it Kristen.dev? Kristen, what's Kristen's last name? I forget already. Kristen Kwong. Kristen K. WNG on the Twitters. She released a new website that is, and I'll put it in the old show notes here. She released a website that's like an OS, basically. It's like mimics an OS, and like it's cool. A React site, and you can drag the window around and stuff like that. But what was most impressive, and this was where, because I saw like the screenshot of a mobile OS, and I just was like, I know this is going to fail on my phone. And so I pulled it up on my phone. And not to like be a doofus, but I just know it's hard to like come up with that. But she has like the little Mac style icons on the right. But then when you go to the phone view, they're actually arrayed on the bottom like a tab bar. And it's just, it's a killer experience. And she knocked it out of the park. And I just was impressed because I just know like that's hard when you get, what am I going to do about the mobile experience, you know? And she figured it out. So, and has a little tab bar of folders at the bottom.
I gotta go to my other computer to look at it.
Oh man, it was really good. So I reckon, anyway, I think there's that new mobile Safari fix, the viewport height fix. Do you remember the name of the property? It's like a WebKit.
Yeah, fill available. Height. Is it WebKit
fill available?
Yeah, that fixes WebKit that.
Fill available.
It has to do with like when the keyboard comes up or like when there's there's like, I don't know, the go back button on them along the bottom and all that.
Yeah, because iOS does like those disappearing header footer bars and they shrink and stuff like that. So your 100 VH calculation was always wrong. 100 VH was never 100 VH. It was 100 VH, but it's now behind the back button and the favorite
part. Right. And you kind of can't change it because that it will break other stuff and the web doesn't like breaking stuff like that. So their solution is like another value that's like, don't use 100 VH, use this fill available, which is really similar but different.
It's similar but different. And so it's good, or like, I'm glad we have that at least. So I think it'll be the problem I always hit was how when I pulled this up on the iPhone, it's broke and all my math's wrong. And I,
yeah,
and so where they went with that is viewport math.
Why didn't they use ENV? They made ENV for freaking the notch and all that stuff. It's like, why is it always something different? I use like not ENV, you know, screen height minus, I don't know. Maybe that's because it's hard to make.
Telling me one of the most closed source operations has some unilateral transparency issues.
Oh, well said.
I would be surprised. Anyway, I do wish it does seem like they find these fixes and they want to release in a way that they can control it, you know, but it would just be better if there was some not sort of secret, but some sort of cabal, or, you know, or like when they changed viewport, the Meta viewport entirely just because, and it was just like, what? You know, so it'd be nice if they didn't do that stuff. So,
yeah, it would. All right. Yeah. Well, we did it. We talked about a bunch of random stuff. That's how we
hope
roll.
You like email, everybody. this is, and if you got this over email, we switched over to MailChimp over on the Shop Talk email. You can get this emailed to you if that's how you prefer to get your podcast, but be sure to download Star Heart Favorite this up on your podcatcher choice. But that's how people find out about the show. We don't really do any marketing, you know, we don't have commercials on other podcasts. So it's only by you sharing it that people find out about it. So we really appreciate that. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. If you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say? Yep.
Shop Talk Show -fill -available.